Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Get around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 175 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio exclusively, only here on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network, also brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch. That's crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch. Stop by crmw.net. And have a look. See for yourself what mountaintop removal is doing to West Virginia. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today being Thursday, August the 14th, 2008. And I almost got that date wrong. Somehow I thought it was the 21st. Time flies. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and it's there that you're going to find links to all of the guests, as well as the audio archives from past shows, as well as links there to our chat room. There are links there also for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page and links to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. You'll also find there a link to the Head On Radio Network main site. And over at the headonradionetwork.com site, you can find out about all of the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network, as well as a PayPal button to make it easier for you to support liberal and progressive radio as heard nowhere else, either via the air or via the Internet. I just found out just moments ago that we're, in fact, carried by iTunes phones, iPods now, or iPhones, actually. Very interesting development is every time I turn around, it looks like we have another carrier. So now you can listen to Strictly Confidential and all of the other programming in your car via your iPhone. The podcasts are available 24 hours a day. You'll find links there. They're hosted by White Rose Society, whiterosesociety.org, and you'll find links there at strictlyconfidentialradio.com. And thank you for spending your evening with us. And again, it is a live show, Thursday, August 14, 2008. So if you're listening shortly after 9 p.m. Eastern time on a Thursday that is August the 14th, it is live, and you're welcome to call in and participate or join us in chat or send email to communicate with myself and the amazing music guests that I'll be introducing shortly. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4, head-on. That's 877-443-2366. If you have unlimited long distance, you could use that. It's area code 304-658-3333. Again, those numbers are 877-443-2366, toll-free, or 304-658-3333. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com, and I do try to check the mail during the breaks. And that's Peter at headonradionetwork.com. It is good to be back. It is good to be out of Internet hell. The telephone company, most incompetent telephone company in the planet, called Embark, has finally, after 15 months of service, acknowledged to my ISP that there is indeed a problem in this neck of the woods. It's amazing that they were able to avoid it that long. Must be a Republican-owned company, eh? In any case, they are addressing it. My speeds are much better now, as everyone in the community. When it goes down, it affects the whole area, so I don't feel particularly singled out, but it certainly is very, very inconvenient. The service seems to be stable now. Also, a special thanks goes out to the listener who donated a power generator to this show. It came in handy early this evening. There was a huge boom outside around 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and the lights went out, so I went and pulled the pull start on the trusty gasoline-powered generator, and it started right up. Thank you, listener. And it carried the internet connections and the computers for the hour and a half that it took to get the power company to get things back in order. So we are very grateful for the donation of that generator. It certainly did help and works beautifully. It's hard to know where to begin introducing Lucy Neal. Lucy Neal comes to us by Mr. Glenn Rivera, who's our executive director of talent and music bookings. Glenn sends us some incredible people to talk to, and indeed, there's an incredible person with us tonight. Her name is Lucy Neal. Lucy was born in Cleveland, Ohio, and she is a talented singer and a songwriter and a vocalist for a long list of artists. Since the early 70s, she's done that. In 74, Lucy was one of the vocalists on the first Silver Convention album. The album was called Save Me, and you'll remember, all of us will remember, the track called Fly, Robin, Fly. What is it with that song? That was such a huge hit. That was back in the early 70s. She's also recorded a single that was released in Germany under the name Lucy O'Day, and she formed a group, Family Tree. She left Family Tree and formed a rock jazz band in Munich. With another Family Tree member, Mel Kennedy, which is called Ruby and the Mudflats. Now, Lucy is currently a real estate agent and a very good one and successful one at that. She lives in San Diego. I think Lucy Neal should get the award hands down for possibly the best domain name in the entire planet. Lucy's real estate site is LucyImHome.com. That's right. She sells houses. Her address is LucyImHome.com. That gets A+. Boy, I wish I could think of all of a domain name like that. I'm surprised it was available. Wonderful. Even though she grew up in Cleveland, she went to a high school in Shaker Heights. She's been a recording artist, a singer, composer, a lyricist, a backup studio vocalist, a television performer, a cast member of the Swiss Theater Company, and they toured Europe doing the musical Hair. She's been a cruise ship entertainer, a folk singer, a waitress, and a caterer, and is, of course, now over at LucyImHome.com. She graduated high school in Shaker Heights in Ohio. She went on to Connecticut College. She has a BA in English Literature. She went on to Harvard to study Psychology of Religion, a woman after my own heart. She's at Wesleyan. She's studied electronic music and North American Indian vocal music. She studied the import and export business, and she's taking courses in creative writing. Wow. She's also an animal lover and shares her life with cats and dogs and turtles and fish and even a python. She volunteers over at Best Friends Animal Sanctuary and the San Diego Humane Society. We'll have to find out more about those when she comes in the show, which would be just a moment. She's also an associate at Scripps Institution of Oceanography and a contributing member of the Nature Conservancy and the Ocean Conservancy and the Marine Mammal Center at the Gorilla Foundation and the Elephant Sanctuary. And she's traveled the world, visited 50 countries, and 13 of those years that were lived outside of the United States were spent in Germany. She's a collector of Dutch art and a gourmet cook, and you don't want to mess with a woman who grows and cures her own olives. This is a fact. Lucy Neal, welcome to Strictly Confidential.
Hey, Peter, thank you.
Thank you. I'm delighted to have you on the show.
Nice to be here.
It is good to have you. I need to ask right off the bat, Lucy, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine.
fine. If that changes at all during the show, you just speak up and let us know, and the studio can make some adjustments. You know,
okay. We
here on the network have started referring to Glenn Rivera as a disco magnet because we never know who he's going to find next. How did you and Glenn meet?
Well, he found me, and I think he found me, I'll have to ask him, I think he found me over the Internet through a couple of other fans, and I had a little bit of a site on the Internet that someone else had created that I think that's where he located me, and he also was in touch with a fan that I have in Holland who's been very helpful in contributing materials to that site. That site is down right now, but Glenn's going to put one back up. So,
interesting.
I think they all connected, and then he found me, and we played telephone for a couple of days or weeks even. And
I wonder if Glenn knew that you were in San Diego at the time. That's his neck of the woods.
Yeah, I think he found that out, yeah. Well, you read the whole list, didn't you, from my website down to the...
Well, I did because it was remarkable. Quite frankly, there were so many things that you've done and such a wide range, it lended itself well to just going through the list. Lucy, what was it like growing up in Cleveland? What was the family? What was your family like growing up as a kid?
I grew up with my mom and my real sister, but when I was 8, my mom remarried, and I inherited 2 teenage siblings, a brother and a sister. I was the youngest of 4 in that combined family, and my mom really influenced me a lot in my love of animals and nature and appreciation of arts, and she was an artist, and she would take me out in the woods and turn over rocks and show me salamanders and snakes, and I get most of all of that from my mom. And then, of course, it was a snowy climate, so we went, you know, sledding in the wintertime, and summertime I spent up in Michigan at camp and teaching canoeing and things like that. It was just a really, really fun growing up.
Well, Lucy, would you say that you got some of your music talent from your mom, too? She seems to have been a great influence for you.
Actually, my musical talent probably comes from my real father. He was in a family of 6 children, and they had a family orchestra. Each one of them played an instrument, and my father had perfect pitch, and he used to listen to the... I remember when I was, 5 and 6, he used to listen and record the opera in New York on Sunday afternoons or Saturday afternoons, and he had a trumpet, and when I was 5 years old, I asked for an electric guitar, and they gave me a plastic ukulele.
Yeah, I think every family had one of those things banging around.
But eventually I got a bigger ukulele, a wooden ukulele, then I got a baritone ukulele, and I also got a banjo that was abandoned by my brother because he didn't want to play it, and I got a mandolin and took piano lessons and just went on from there.
I see. You mentioned your father had perfect pitch. Are you also a perfect pitch kind of woman?
I can't claim to have perfect pitch, not at all.
Nonetheless, you have an innate talent for it because I don't see any music in your educational background, so all this must come from the heart and be a gift.
Yeah. And I've always loved to harmonize. I mean, even when I was 14, I put together a group of 5 girls, my junior high school buddies, and we entered the junior high school talent show and with a song called Well, 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 and we won the talent show, and then they asked us to do some gigs, and we only knew one song. So we were some swellers, and we put together a repertoire back then, you know, Sloop John B. and Scott Soda, and mostly, you know, folk music, and we all played guitars, and we started doing some gigs, and we even had a television show. That was when I was 14. So it's always been in my life, and then at summer camp, I would play the guitar and entertain the campers on rainy days in the lodge and things like that. It's just always been a part of my life.
Wow, tell us about the television show. How did that work out from Well, Well, Well to a television camera?
Well, it was just a local TV show, Cleveland local TV, and I don't know how they heard about us, but they did, and they asked us on, and we sang a song or two, and I have a funny picture of people standing in high heels and bouffant hairdos and these enormous cameras, and we're sitting there in our little, you know, madness blouses that our mothers made, and matching, you know, skirts, pleated skirts, and playing our guitars, and I remember being so disillusioned, because after we did that cut of a song, the announcer said, would you like to do another song? This was after the cameras were off, and we said, sure, no problem. And so he said, okay, we'll have you do another song. And he stood in front of us, cameras went on, and he said, thank you for all your cards and letters. We had such a tremendous response to these young ladies. We're going to have them on again this week. And there we were in the same little outfit, so we sang another song.
Oh,
and I
no.
was thinking, he lied!
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's the television for you. And
yeah.
you must have had some wonderful times. And I'm wondering about when you were coming up through school, especially high school, were you active in the theater? I noticed one of the things you've done is you performed in the European Tour of Hair.
Yes. No, I wasn't doing theater in high school. I did one show, at just kind of a funny variety type of show that we put together in college. But no, I wasn't in theater, but I was invited to do the musical production of Hair in Germany and German-speaking Europe. And that goes back to my days in Morocco, where I met some guys who had been with the cast of Hair, and we started singing together in Morocco, and they subsequently invited me to join the cast. That's kind of a long story. I don't know how much of it you'd want to hear.
Well, we would like to know all of the details. We'll get them out of you one way or the other. Now, Germany, you spoke German, but you've lived in Munich and Germany and Vienna and Austria and the island of Crete. How did you come to travel so far? This is really just something else. I got a woman from Cleveland. How did this come about?
Well, when I was in college, graduated from Connecticut College, and one of my classmates there, we decided, this was in 1966, and, you know, right after Kent State and Vietnam War, and we said, we don't want to fold back into this establishment. So we decided we would travel as when we could while we were still single and jobless, and so, okay, we're going to Europe. And so in this summer, after I graduated, I went out with another friend, a different friend, to Carmel, California, and worked as a cocktail waitress to earn some money for the trip to Europe, and got to be the end of August or beginning of September, and I called up my friend from college, and she was driving taxi in New Jersey for the summer to earn money, and I said, Linda, you ready to go? And she said, no way, I don't have enough money saved, and so I didn't know what to do, and I called my mom in Cleveland, and I said, Mom, Linda's not ready to go to Europe. What, I don't know what to do. And she said, well, what's stopping you from going by yourself, dear?
Your mother, wow, what a character.
Yeah, my jaw dropped, but I didn't want to let on that I was would be too timid. So I said, yeah, right, Mom. And so about a week later, I was on a plane from New York to Luxembourg and London, and I went in a backpack and a guitar and an open-ended ticket, and I started in London, and I just was by myself, and I met people here and there, and I traveled down through the communist bloc, places I hadn't been before, because I'd been to Europe as a teenager with my grandmother, and I went down through Eastern Europe and Czechoslovakia and Yugoslavia and Bulgaria and down into Greece, and then in Greece, I went down to the island of Crete and got an apartment there with a couple of people that I was traveling with. And then I moved on and went to North Africa, hitched across North Africa, and stayed in Morocco for 7 months. And being a hippie, and that's where I met these two guys who had been with the cast of Hair. One was a black guy from San Francisco, and the other one was a German guy. And they were in Morocco, and I met them on the beach, and somebody said, oh, there's two guys from Hair down on the beach. You ought to come see them. So I went down there, and they were in this little cafe kiosk type of thing, and the guy from San Francisco had this auto harp, and I said, oh, wow. I said, I haven't seen an auto harp since I was, you know, in elementary school at church. And so he said, you know, well, you're welcome to play it, and I picked it up, and I took it out of a little cafe, and I sat down on the beach, and I started strumming this auto harp, and I was singing. It Stoned Me from Van Morrison.
And he
brought his friend out. He said, you got to hear her voice. She's got a really low voice. It's really interesting. And so they said, why don't you get together, move in with us, and we can put a group together, and we'll sing here in clubs in Morocco. And I said, well, I can't because I'm headed south. I'm planning to go to Timbuktu, no joke aside, and I was going to go over to Brazil. But I went out with him that evening, and then the next day I headed south, and I didn't get where I was going. I was stopped at the Spanish Air border, came back, moved in with them in Agadir, and we put a little group together, and we were singing in clubs. This story is way, way too long, but...
No, we have plenty of time.
Oh, well, anyway, we sang in some clubs, and we went up to Casablanca, and we sang in a couple of more clubs, and then at Casablanca, I got a letter from my parents saying they were moving to La Jolla, and that I needed to come home and clean out my room. By this time, I had been gone for a year, and so I made my way slowly back to California to clean out my room, and I hadn't gone through the $900 that I had taken with me in a whole year, and got home, cleaned out my room, drove a car, one of their cars, to La Jolla, and when I was in La Jolla, I got a telegram saying, we've rejoined the cast of Hair, the Swiss touring production, and we've played a tape of your voice for the director, and if you want a job, be in Dusseldorf on the 11th of March. So I picked up and went to Dusseldorf.
And but you had to do this in German. How did you pick up German? Did you?
I didn't speak a word of it when I went. I learned the show phonetically. And I spoke French at the time, and I learned it in school, and I was speaking French quite well in Morocco. I do have an affinity for languages. And so I learned the show phonetically, and it was months into it before I had any clue what I was saying. Just singing it with a pretty decent pronunciation. And slowly I learned it, and then pretty soon you start learning how to speak German. I never took classes or anything, but the biggest challenge when you're speaking foreign language is for someone to hand you a telephone. You know, it's different when you're in person and you can gesture with your hands and everything's in context. But at one point, I just started to be able to speak on the phone, and my German, all of a sudden, my German was better than the English that my German friends were speaking. And I stayed there for 13 years, so I just, I got pretty proficient at it.
13 years. And,
13 years.
This
and
was
part of that travel that you read, part of that, these 50 countries that I visited, was because with my last group in Germany, which was the Hornets, we worked twice a year on cruise ships as the Star Entertainment. So that's how I saw a lot of countries as well, on cruise ships.
Well, I have a note. By the way, I want to tell you, one of our chatters, when you were talking about performing in the same outfits, she lives in Ohio. Maybe this is it. She said to tell you that Dorothy Fuldheim wouldn't have been caught dead in the same outfit twice, and that you would know who she was talking to. You'll have to tell us who Dorothy Fuldheim is. I don't have a clue.
Well, I just recognize her as a TV personality, but I can't tell you much more about her.
Is that was someone from the Ohio area, was it?
Yeah,
or
I think
she was
local, yeah.
I see. I have a note here that when you were with the Hornets, that's for some reason that you were, the Hornets were very popular with the multimillionaire old money crowd. Now, this is very interesting to me. How did that come to be?
Well, this was the group that I had. It was the last group before I came back to the States, and it was I put it together with Dieter Walter, who was one of the people I had been in a lot of groups with, and whose name appears on many disco albums, including Silver Convention and Donna Summer, and she and I did a lot of backup vocals together, and we had been in this group Love Generation together, and we decided to put a new group together of women singing, singing songs of the 60s mostly, you know, like the Ronettes and that type of, lots of harmonies and doolangs and stuff. And so we did that. And we put, we got Christina Harrison and at the time Dagmar Helbert, but was quickly substituted with Linda Thompson, who was with Silver Convention. And we did a fantastic club show, and it was just a gas. And we did kind of a la Bette Midler with really tacky outfits and a little choreography. I remember we sang I Like Bread and Butter, and we actually had an assembly line making peanut butter sandwiches on stage and passing them out to the audience. And,
and one, perfect.
One song I did a la Bette Midler, I was I took a song that I thought was public domain. It turns out it wasn't, but it was a song in Polynesian from an Adventures in Paradise movie soundtrack. And we sang a couple of couplets in original Polynesian, and the next two were in Hawaiian sounding Bavarian. You know, like Bette Midler used to do with Kamana Wanalea, that kind of
yes.
thing.
Classic.
And I wore like a coconut shell bra on stage and played the ukulele, and the girls were grass skirts. Anyway, we had a ball, and then that's when our producer Ralph Siegel found us and signed us up. So we got playing gigs around, and pretty soon we had to move out of the club scene because it couldn't support the four girls and the five guys on stage, and so we moved into conventions and private parties, and some of these parties were catered by Gerhard Käfer, who's the biggest caterer in Germany, and he invited us to sing at some of his parties, where these parties were loaded with very wealthy people. The first party we did was not through Gerhard Käfer, it was through a friend of mine who was dating at the time, the woman who was she was heiress to the guys in Ariel. It would make wash powder.
My like God.
Ariel?
Yes, vaguely, yeah.
Yeah, the washing powder fortune.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah.
At her party were a lot of extremely wealthy Europeans. Well, they just couldn't get enough of us. They thought it was hilarious, and so they kept inviting us to their parties. And
one
crowd was... Stakios, he's the second biggest shipping magnet next to Onassis.
And
Gunter Sachs, who was an industrialist. He was married to Brigitte Bardot at one time, but he was extremely wealthy. And Mr. Rossi from Martini and Rossi. Helena Rochat was there at the party. And Christina Onassis was there sitting on the floor in front of me. Then fiancé, the Russian guy. And, the Baroness from Guinness, the Guinness Brewery Baroness. Anyway, this was the crowd. And it was what I call old money, because they had been wealthy for so long, they really knew how to have a good time, and they were not uptight like the nouveau riche, and we just had a ball. And we, in those, many of those private parties, we took with us a band called Supercharge, which is a kind of a Blues Brother type of band from Liverpool, who was a great band in their own right. And anyway, we had a lot of fun, and we'd be flown to hunting lodges in Austria and castles in St. Moritz, and Christina Arnassus invited us to play at Maxime in Paris at her wedding. And we weren't able to because of scheduling conflicts. But it was really fun times.
Well, Lucy, didn't it at times you just sit back and shake your head and wonder that you know, leaving Cleveland with $900 that it turned into what it did turn into? You had to be stunned by it. I am.
Yeah, it's really something. It really was.
Well, an amazing adventure. Well, if you would tell us about your connection with the Silver Convention and how did that begin?
Well, I was in the music scene in Munich And there's a lot of recording going on in Munich, and lots of recording studios. And so I and Gita Walter and Betsy Allen and several, and Roberta Kelly, lots of us were just asked into the studios to be backup vocals, just to studio gigs. And so we did a lot of them. And among them, we were asked by Michiel Kunze and Sylvester Levi to sing on this production that they were going to call the Silver Convention. The group didn't exist. It was just a studio production. And so we sang all of those tracks that you're familiar with, Fly, Robin, Fly, and Save Me, and Chains of Love, and all those great, great songs. And in fact, on Fly, Robin, Fly, oh, and Sylvester Levi, who was the composer and arranger, he's actually Hungarian, and he brought those string arrangements, and he was actually the first guy to use strings in disco. You know, that doo, doo, doo type of falling strings. And then everybody started copying him. But this Silver Convention LP was the first time they were used in that way. And Sylvester was a brilliant musician. But when we were singing Fly, Robin, Fly, for instance, we didn't realize that there wasn't going to be a lead vocal on it. And so we thought we were just singing backup. And then we were kind of amazed to find out that we were it, having made something like $45 per song for the production.
That's a shame, because that track alone was staggeringly huge. Was it as big in Europe as it was in the U.S.?
Yes, it was. So to this day, I think Roberta Kelly is still angry with, if not trying to put forth a lawsuit, just trying to get some of the money, which was rightfully ours. But, you know, it's so long ago that I'm just saying, well, water over the bridge. It was fun. It was really
fun. I've heard some similar stories from other artists that have been on, the way the music business treated everyone as a almost like an hourly wage. You come in and sing, then we pay you, and you go away, and we don't want to hear from you when it's a big hit.
Yeah, we there wasn't that attitude, but obviously that's what they did. So we were just happy to have the work, you know, and we got paid per title, and it was fun, great music. It was really fun to sing. We had a ball. But then what happened is they started asking for the group. So there was no group. They, in fact, on one of the album releases of Save Me, I think, I can't remember if it was the German or it was the German release, not the American. They had all this collection of people, colorful people, and on the back, and none of them had anything to do with Silver Convention. It was just for the album cover. But they, the song, particularly Fly, Robin, Fly, was such a big hit in discos here that they started asking for the group to appear. And there wasn't a group, and Geeta and I at the time were very busy with a group called Love Generation. We were doing television appearances and on the road and everything, so we couldn't leave that to do Silver Convention. I don't even know if they wanted us, but they put together a group then with Linda Thompson and Penny McLean and Ramona Wolf to go out and be Silver Convention, and they were dancing around in slinky costumes and mouth and lip syncing to our voices with great success.
Very interesting. Very interesting. We had a guest about a year ago who was an expert on Italo disco. His name is Alex the Ticket, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, and he told us some other groups. He mentioned Fun, in specific. They did the Color My Love track. That Fun was actually a studio-owned name, but Fun consisted of different people at different times. It sounds very similar to what you went through.
Yeah. I mean, the signature sound was more in the vocal arrangement and the musical arrangement than it was the individual voices. And in Silver Conventions, in that instance, when they went into the studio to record a second LP, then they used the gals that were actually on stage, because they're all singing their own right. So they sang Get Up and Boogie, and we sang the first LP.
I see. So you were part of the group that sang Save Me then off the first LP?
Yes. That's right. Yeah.
Well, I'd like to take a moment. Glenn has graciously edited some of your tracks in Radio Link's segments, and I'd like to run that for the listeners, if that's okay, the Save
Sure.
Me track.
You're glad
okay.
to do it.
Me too. It's great. Bob, if you had run Save Me, you have it listed as Save Me by Silver Convention. Absolutely irresistible disco music. Absolutely irresistible. How could you not love a song like that? And
it's great. The whole LP was just really fun, and I think that, you know, Sylvester Levi had a lot to do with that, because he was really classically trained. He was a really stunning musician. So it was we had fun singing it. I didn't care that we only made $45 a song.
Yeah, and even today it brings such joy to people. The chat room completely recognized it and started talking about the year, et cetera. So
it's so danceable, you know. It's hard to keep still when you hear it.
And
to this day.
From the heart.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. A real track, nothing phony about it. Glenn Rivera in the chat room, by the way, he's in our chat room, points out that the bassist played this live all the way through.
Yes, well, we were doing it on 24 track tape, which is about 3 inches wide, these enormous rolls of tape, you remember them, and
yes.
Studio boards that were, gosh, you know, like 15 feet long, just a whole room. And they didn't have cut and paste like they do now. It wasn't computerized. So what they could do, and this is the only thing that they were capable of, was if you were singing and you didn't like the way that you sang, or any instrument, let's say, you don't like the way you did this one particular section or riff, or you were off on a note or whatever, you could say, you know, I just don't, you'd listen to it and say, I just don't like the way I did that. So they said, okay, we'll drop you in. So they would play the song and you'd sing along with it, or play along if you were a musician. And then at the piece that you were trying to repair, they would just cut in and then cut out again. But it was within the whole tape. They had the ability to do that. But now, I went in the studio a couple of years ago, and I was just dumbfounded that they could just cut and paste. You could say, well, gee, I really like the way I nailed that chorus. And they'll say, okay, we'll use that one. And they just cut and paste and repeat it throughout the whole song. And those days, you literally sang or played from one end to the other.
It is pretty amazing, actually. It's almost like word processing. You could anything you could do in a word processor, you could do with music these days. I DJed back in the 80s when it was vinyl and turntables, and we certainly didn't do any cutting and pasting back in those days. We have a caller for you, Lucy. We have VJC. This is Victor from Disco 935. In New York City. Victor, welcome to the show.
Hi, Peter. Hi, Lucy.
Hi, Victor. How are you?
Okay. I mean, obviously, I just wanted to chime in because the minute I heard Save Me, I mean, it blew my mind away. I mean, obviously, I run Disco 93.5. I'm a disco DJ from back in the day, yeah. And I run all this old disco from back in the day. The album itself is just pure, it's just timeless music. It's just, I'm hearing it now, and it just puts goosebumps, you know, it gives me goosebumps just listening to the jams.
Yeah.
Obviously, I didn't know that you, Always Another Girl, that you sang, that you put the talking part on that. One of my favorite songs, Always Another Girl. I mean, obviously, now I get who the vocalist was, and it's you. I never knew that. I'm reading your bio. It's amazing.
It's me, yeah. Did you hear me say earlier? Have you been listening the whole time? Did you hear me say about?
Yeah, I think maybe I must have missed maybe the first 5 minutes of the show.
Oh, okay, yeah, because I was saying that the Sylvester put those strings in. He was the first to use them in disco. It's so
cool. Right. The thing is, it's just like that music back in the day. I mean, it was just it lifted you. If you didn't move to that, you were dead because. It's just great music. It's just
right.
Amazing. At that time, another group came out, Crying Heights Affair, The Tramps, Silver Convention, those type, you know, and when all that music came out at that time, it was just great, great music. It's just unfortunate. You just can't, you know, it's nice that we can bottle that and bring it back today, but it's just not like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to deal with what we have today. And just,
there's no resurgence?
Yes. I hope it could be a resurgence. I don't know. But I wanted to just tell you was that great vocals on this LP. Plus, I was just reading on that the bio, Red Point Orchestra. Is that what it is, the orchestra, Red Point Orchestra?
That was another group I was in with Donna Summer.
Right.
And,
Was that disco also?
No, it wasn't. That was.
Yeah, because I was trying to find out what was that, because I mean, I'm trying to read up on it. Cause there is a group called Red Point Orchestra that I have, but it's a different version, and I was saying, maybe did they sing on that? I was, you know, basically,
so
I got so much dance.
We had quite a few vocalists on Red Point in the beginning, and then I think Saite Marvos, who was the leader of that group, he took it on beyond us, and I think he took it in an instrumental direction. But initially, Donna Summer, Mel Kennedy, and I, and Peter Bischoff were the vocalists for that group.
Okay. When was this recorded? Was it before the Silver Convention?
No, it was, maybe it was.
Because obviously when she came out with that LP herself, it had to be before 75 because she came out with... you know, Love to Love You Baby.
Oh, Donna. Oh, yes, yeah, Donna's right. Song. After Love to Love You, yeah, then she got big. It was before that, that's right. Mm-hmm.
Right, so it had to be in the early 70s, right? I guess.
Well, not too early. It was probably 73 or just short, okay. Right, shortly before this. It only
right.
happened
not
in a very short period of time.
Right, mm-hmm. You know, it's just, I'm just dumbfounded because I really don't know what to say to you because it's one of my all-time favorite LPs, and I'm talking to one of the ladies that sang on this, and it's like, I'm 52, and I'm saying to myself, I was 19 at the time, and I'm talking to Lucy Neal, one mm-hmm. of the vocalists from the LP. It's just amazing. I mean, yeah. You know, I don't know why I'm speechless.
Oh, well, that's nice, Victor. We at the time, too, we were, when we were singing these things, we were kind of oblivious to what impact it was having in the States, at least until they started asking for gigs. We found out that it was big in discotheques and stuff. But in general, we were doing these things for what we thought was the German market. We were fairly
right.
unaware of how successful they were internationally. I'm only finding out now from Glenn Rivera how popular many of these projects that I was on were over here. I was surprised, in fact.
Yeah, well obviously back here, I'm from New York. I'm still in New York. When it was played here in New York back in 75, I mean, all the young kids, including me, it was just amazing. It was just amazing LP, and it still is. I mean, it's just timeless. So when I heard it back then, and even though it came from Germany, it was just great production work from bottom to end. And it's
yeah.
just unfortunate that it's just not like that anymore today in the music scene. Because like you were saying, cut and paste and all that other stuff is just,
yeah.
today it's all with computerized. And then just you know, it's all about the making a quick buck. But back in the day, I guess they were just making it from the heart. And it's just not like that anymore.
Yeah.
I guess. Yeah. I'm not, you know, I'm not too much into the politics of the music. I'm more into the music itself.
But you're still working as a DJ?
Yes, I am. I run Disco 93.5 on the internet. I've been running it for 10 years, and I do live shows, and I play stuff like Silver Convention, Tramps. I even go deeper into the crates and, you know, back 70s, 80s, all that stuff. I continue to do this. That's
great.
How I met Glenn and, you know, whatever. I know Glenn Rivera also. I mean, I never met him, but we chatted on the phone and emailed back and forth the last several years, and he does restructuring.
Oh, yeah.
Pictures. And,
it looks like he's brought a lot of people together.
Yeah, I mean, I'm telling him who's next. I think he says, I mean, he's amazing talent himself. I know he's a DJ and he also does videos. So, you know, Glenn, great job. I'm waiting for the next one. But Lucy, seriously, I have to just say one thing before I leave. It's just a thrill and an honor to be talking to Lucy Neal, one of the vocalists of Silver Convention. Wow.
Well, thank you, Victor. You're very
okay.
sweet.
Thank you, Victor. Thank
All
you
right.
for joining
have
us.
Have a good
Victor.
Evening and continue with the interview with Peter.
Okay. Nice
Bye.
Thank
have
you,
a good night.
You know, Victor is absolutely correct when he said at the beginning of his call, if that doesn't move you, you're dead. There was a particular feeling that went with some of these tracks. And, you know, in the conversations we just had with Victor, we brought up Donna Summer and Love to Love You, and I'm wondering how this connection with Donna Summer happened because I'm seeing it referenced with the production of Hair also. How did – tell us about that, your relationship with Donna and how that all worked out.
Donna had been in Germany longer than I had. She arrived in the late 60s, I believe. And she was singing, and she was doing, she was in the production of Hair before I joined it, and she was gone from that production by the time I came in. But she had also done the musical Godspell, in which she was very funny. I don't know if you know Donna, but she has a fantastic sense of humor, and she put on goofy hats and walked like a duck. And
How funny is that?
Yeah. So, but anyway, so she had been doing that in Germany even before I got there, and then of course there was just this music scene in Germany, and we were all singing, and she was singing in studios as well, and it was obvious to all of us, and to me also when we were on stage with Red Point Orchestra, that Donna was an amazing talent, And not only was she a talent, you'd stand on stage next to her and you knew that she was going to be a star. She just had that star quality and large elbows. but I love Jeff, and she's, and I still am in touch with her. And anyway, so they, she came in, Giorgio decided he wanted to do a solo LP with her. Actually, she had a recording before this Love to Love You album, but she did the he did the Love to Love You Baby album with her, and some subsequent ones as well. And we all, same old gals, sang back up, the same ones that are on the Silver Convention. That was just the Munich theme. And it was interesting how Giorgio put that particularly Love to Love You Baby on tape. He would put, he just had kind of the basic chords, and there wasn't really any melody, but he had us all sing. There were four of us. It was me and Gita and Betsy Allen and Roberta Kelly, and he would have all four of us sing one part. Love to love you, baby, baby. Love to love you, baby, baby. Love to love you, baby. Love to love. And then he'd have us all four sing the part, the third above that, and all four sing the third above that. So you have this big carpet of sound where all of us are singing all the voices. And then basically he just said, Donna, do something. You know, and she started her, I love to love you, baby. And then, you know, her groaning and everything, and she just did it. And another interesting little tale is, not so little, actually, but he told the musicians to just play something. And he had this carpet of sound, and he had this little carpet of keyboards, Pete Bellotti. And he said, Dave King, the bass player, he said, can you play a riff? And Dave goes, do 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 do. Do, 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 do. He starts this riff.
Yes, yes, that classic and riff. Yeah.
Fantastic, you know. But Dave wrote that riff. That wasn't written for him. And so Dave also at the, later on said, hey, you know, I should get some royalties on this song, not just being played for the session, because I had very much a part in the whole creation.
Yeah.
Oh, he lost that battle as well. But anyway, that's how Giorgio was putting things together at the time, and the musicians were just kind of creating it as it went along.
Well, Lucy, I should give out our telephone numbers again. If you'd like to participate with Lucy Neal and myself, the toll-free line is 877-443-2366. 877-443-2366. If you have unlimited long distance, you could use that. It's area code 304-658-3333. 304-658-3333. They both ring in West Virginia. And, Lucy, we have another caller on the line for you, and that is we have Jackie on the line. Jackie, welcome to Strictly Confidential.
Lucy?
Yes, Jackie?
Hi. Yeah, this is Jackie. I'm in
Hi.
Newport Beach with my friends Nancy, Becky, and Bee. anyway, we're wondering, great to hear you on the radio, and love listening to the interview and learning some things that we didn't know before, and we'd like to know what you're doing these days.
These days, I have a group, Moxie, with Nancy.
Oh, you're not rusty. You were just singing on the radio, and you sounded great.
Thank you. You're with my Nancy, Becky, and Bee, right?
Exactly.
Yes, 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 yes. Nancy,
so we just
Peter,
like to hear what you're doing these days, and when can we
I have
you
a
again?
Group of, I'm part of a group of five women, and we also sing oldies for the most part and some new songs, and we all play instruments, and I play guitar, not very well. Nancy plays it. Kick and electric guitar and a beautiful Taylor, and we sing lots of harmony, and we're having a great time, and we're playing for Nancy's wedding on the 30th.
Oh, well, I look forward to seeing you. I've heard a lot about you. I've heard your CD, and look forward to hearing more of you.
Are you going to be there on the 30th?
I believe so.
Okay. Good.
Well, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
All right.
Thank you for joining us, Jackie.
Say hello to everybody.
I will. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
What about Moxie? Where does Moxie perform, this group?
Moxie performs in my living room for the most part.
And
sometimes Nancy's living room. And we perform in backyard parties, friends of ours, you know, like three-day breast cancer walk and usually fundraisers or 50th birthday parties, things like that. And the only gig that we have ever done where we played for the public was last October. And in order to find a hall for us to play in, I actually joined the Moose Lodge. I am officially one of the women of the Moose.
And
I joined this Moose Lodge in San Diego, complete with paneling and tacky plaques on the walls and an enormous moose head over the stage.
My father was a moose. I too, have experienced the Moose Lodge. And you have summed it up perfectly.
Yeah, exactly. And when I first told my band members about that, we could use that. Since I'm a member, we can use this hall for free. We just have to guarantee that the bar will make something like $300 or something. And one of our members, Tracy, said, "Ooh, no, that's so tacky." And I said, "Well, just camp it up." And actually, it turned out to be just a ball. And I was able to invite my real estate friends and other friends and colleagues who hadn't normally didn't have an opportunity to see us because we just play at private parties. And because we're five professional women, it's always been really hard to find a time when we can actually get together to rehearse. So we don't play often, we don't rehearse often, and sometimes a year goes by between gigs. But we have fun when we do play.
Well, I'm going to loop back just a little bit to something we talked about earlier, the Hornets. That you this was with the coconut bra, I think, or the coconut bathing suit top, and Anassis was sitting on the floor watching you, and some incredible names you dropped. I'm seeing now that we actually have is this the track Hawaii? Is that the one that you did that you were referring to? And that we're talking about that.
We have the
track called Hawaii in our staff.
There might be one or two versions of that on that. What you're looking at. Hold on, I'm going to grab this. It's Waikiki Tamare. Let's see. It's in one side's in German and one side is, yes, Hawaii would be the right one. Waikiki Tamare, it shows up again, but with an English lyric. I don't like it as well. So the one that's called Hawaii is the one I'm referring to, that's partly in Hawaiian sounding Bavarian.
Wonderful. Was this done on a cruise ship in front of those folks, or what was the scenario when you performed for them?
That song we did primarily in clubs, and brought down the house with it, just smaller clubs. It was just lots of fun. But I don't know that we ever did that one on cruise ships. We're a little more staid on cruise ships.
Is this the one that you made the peanut butter sandwiches and handed them out?
No, that was I'm not getting butter.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Part of the Hornets. I'd love for the listeners to hear the Hawaii track. We described the scene earlier in the show, and we have a copy of it loaded. And this is when Lucy Neal was with the Hornets, and the track is called Hawaii. If you'd roll that, Bob.
Thank you.
certainly see. I could certainly see how the multimillionaire old money folks loved it. It's absolutely priceless and unique. Absolutely unique.
It was really fun. Yeah.
Yeah. And what was the was that the sound of maybe a macaw screeching in the background? What was the what was that that extra sound that came in there several times?
It sounded like I don't know if it was made by us or something else. I don't even recall.
I see. What an amazing track. Tell us about Roseanne Cash.
Oh, well, Roseanne wanted to make an LP, and she was a little bit intimidated about making one in the States because of, you know, being under in the shadow of her famous dad. And she met a gal named Renata Dom, who was the promotion lady for Ariola Records in Germany. And Renata was in charge of taking care of all the American artists who came to Germany, and Herbie Hancock and people like that. And anyway, so she had met Roseanne while she was, I don't know what she was doing, maybe in the States with Emmylou Harris or somebody like that. And Roseanne said to her, I'd love to make an LP, but I'm a little bit afraid to. And Renata said, well, why don't you come and make it in Munich? We have great studios in Munich, and you could do it there and be not in the shadow of your dad, and, you know, it might be easier for you. So she talked her into coming to Munich to produce her first LP. And she introduced her to me right away because here I was, an American gal in Munich, someone whom she could relate to. So we hung out together in my living room and played guitars and stuff like that. And I played her a song that I had written back in 1972 called Thoughts from the Train. And she liked it, and so they put it on the LP, and it ended up being her single. However, she wasn't real happy with the production in general because of the guys who were producing this LP. And the arranger of the LP, who was Czechoslovakian and didn't really like country music. So she wasn't totally happy with the whole production, as it turned out. But that's how I met Roseanne. And then when I would come back to the States, I would see her. And I went up to L.A. to see her and Rodney and Emmylou up in when they were in Los Angeles and stayed at her house in Calabasas.
Really amazing. Lucy, I'm going to interject. We have a caller on the line for you who's calling from the Netherlands, and so he's paying a lot of long-distance tolls to speak with you. Right, we're going to bring Hans on from the Netherlands. Hans, welcome to the show.
Hello?
Good evening, Hans.
Good evening, Peter, and good evening, Lucy.
Hi, Hans. How are you? I get to hear your voice. I know, Hans.
Well, we never talked, so this is a premiere, a first.
I didn't think you should stay up till 3 in the morning.
Well, I'm free the next day, so I can sleep out, and I think this was a one-of-a-lifetime opportunity to have you on the air for a couple of hours, 2 hours, I think it's lasting, this show?
Yeah.
1 hour and a half?
Yeah. Oh, great. Yeah, Hans, just so you know, Peter, Hans has been very instrumental. He's one of the fans who found me on the Internet, and he's been very instrumental in compiling lots and lots of information about my musical career. And between Hans and a guy in Sweden, Soren, and Glenn, they know more about what I have sung on than I do, and they will say, well, what about that LP? And I don't even remember singing on it.
Remarkable.
And they'll prove it to me, and they'll show me a jacket cover. And anyway, how are you doing, Hans?
I'm doing fine. It's good. I'm hanging on to your lips, listening to the story. Of course, I know most of them. It's nice to hear them from your own experience. And I wanted to say, I know Lucy Neal for about 5 years now, I think.
Yes.
Something around. And we almost email weekly, and it's a great pleasure to know you, and it's a great honor, and it's very nice, and I'm very glad that I played a little part on that. That I put you together with Glenn, and that you're now on the air.
Yes, thank you.
It's nice.
You played a very big part, and one of these days I hope I can meet you in person.
Well, I'm sure that will happen. Don't know when, don't know why, but we will meet again. And it was very nice talking to you. And
thank you.
I'm going to listen to, and then in a while I'm going to bed because it's in the middle of the night here.
Yes, it is. What is it, 4 o'clock in the morning now?
Okay, we'll email, and we still keep in contact. And say hello to Glenn, yes?
Okay, thank you. Thanks for calling, Hans.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for calling, Hans. Wonderful. Our first call from the Netherlands, and we've had some emails from the Netherlands in the past, but that's the first call from the Netherlands. A remarkable, remarkable caller. Lucy, you seem to have made dear friends all over the planet.
They've found me. I've just been amazed. Well, thanks to Google, I guess. Yeah.
Speaking of Google, I'm going to bring up your real estate business site, which is lucyimhome.com, which is just fabulous. And I noticed that on your real estate, on the site that you sell real estate in San Diego, that you include in your bio information about the Silver Convention and about your singing past. How many of your clients know you or recognize you and are just jaw-dropped because they read that on your site?
Surprisingly few. They go to my site and they look for houses.
Oh,
don't
shame.
Even notice. But, you know, I just decided to put it on there because most real estate agents didn't grow up wanting to be real estate agents. They always started out with another career. That's less true now, I think, but certainly with my age and a little bit younger, we were always doing something else before, and we never... You don't find that out about people, and so that's why I put at the top we could have something in common, because all the different places you've lived or the hobbies that you have and things you've done in your life as careers or part-time jobs, and I always think, well, I could start up some sort of connection, but surprisingly few people pick up on it.
That's interesting, and
yeah.
And San Diego is a boom real estate market. I assume that things are as complicated there now as with the rest of the country regarding real estate and financing.
Very much so. And in fact, I think California is leading the nation in foreclosures.
Oh, my.
That has become the market, foreclosures and short sales. It's not fun.
Well, strictly confidential, only wishes you the ones that actually can be financed come your way. So just... Yeah, good feeling toward you. I want to speaking of the site and the fact that you talk about yourself on the site, you also mentioned Fly Robin Fly on the site, and we've mentioned it earlier in the show. That Glenn has just emailed us a copy of Fly Robin Fly, so I'd like to go ahead and run that because it's been one of the topics this evening and certainly one of the absolute classics that you were involved in. And this is from the Save Me album, isn't that right?
Yes, from the same one as the other Silver Convention that you just played, yeah.
Okay. And Save Me and Fly Robin Fly. Our producer mentions that he was a boy when Fly Robin Fly. He remembers it well. In fact, he's named his son Robin. One wonders if he did that. One never knows around here. Bob, if you'd run the Fly Robin Fly track for us, please, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
Absolutely wonderful classics. And it's a great example of what you were talking about earlier with the violins inserted there.
Yes.
Yeah, and that did become quite the standard, the soaring violins and the sweet string sound. And it's interesting that it debuted. I had no idea that's when that began.
Yeah, yeah. Just from his classical background, it was just so innovative.
Were you actually in the studio with the violinist?
No, we weren't. We came in. Most of that stuff was already on the track.
I see.
Actually, I'm not sure if the violin was there, but everything else was. Can't
Lucy, tell us about... Yes, tell us about Harry Thuman. Now, he did a disco classic called Underwater, and that was on an LP called American Express back in 79, and Kangaroo, which is Bahamas project. You worked with Harry Thuman. How did that... We have one of the tracks, too. Tell us about that.
Harry was a brilliant sound engineer, and he lived out in the country outside of Munich, and he had this large house and a new house, and he built this fabulous recording studio there. It was a little inconvenient because you had to have a car to get there, and most of us in Munich didn't have cars. We took public transportation and rode our bicycles, and so I remember I bought, I'm getting ahead of myself, Harry lived this fabulous studio, and he attracted a lot of people to his studio, including La Bionda brothers from Italy. Baby Records did a lot of their productions there, and I think even the Rolling Stones came down at once and used his studio. But more than that, he was just a very innovative engineer. And so he called me in to work on these projects, and I wrote lyrics for all of that Underwater LP and then the one after that, Bahamas. Forget even now what they were all called, but and he would just come up with a lyric line. He'd say, "I want this one to be called American Express," and then I would write lyrics on it, and or "I want this one to be about Christine," and so I'd write the lyrics. And Hermann Weindorf helped him compose the music, and Harry sang. Like Underwater doesn't have any lyrics; it doesn't have any vocals on it. It's purely instrumental and studio effects, and that gives you a real good idea of what he could do in the studio. And I remember there was one track that called Submarine on one of those LPs, and he created an audio illusion of a submarine by doing a short echo left to right, giving it a metallic kind of clang, and doing a long echo front to back, so you felt like you were in a metal tube. It was quite innovative, and that's the kind of music that it really helps to be listening to in surround sound and good acoustic.
Ah, yes. Those were back in the days of quadraphonic. We call it surround sound now, but back in the day it was called quadraphonic.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, we have a track.
It's something, and I was just going to say, because he lived out in the country, and because I had to be out there just about every day because I was working on these projects with him, I bought my first car in Munich, and I bought this little VW Bug, and I used one, and I would clutter out to the country to go to the studio every day.
How sweet is that? A kid from Cleveland buys a Volkswagen Beetle to go out to a recording studio. Who could put it together, a story like this? It's really quite remarkable. We do have the track. It's a medley, actually. Dee Dee Sound and Harry Thuman. It's a medley. You wrote the lyrics for both of these. Tell us about these.
Well, now this is why I'm at Glenn's house. I said to Glenn, I don't want them to call me at my house because I'm not going to remember everything, and Glenn has all the vinyl for all of these things. So
yes,
I'm looking here.
Photograph. It's a huge
now,
wall.
You're talking about not the Underwater one, but another one?
It's referred to...
You're referring to
referred
what?
To as, it's referred to on the track listing as Dee Dee Sound Harry Thuman Medley.
Oh, the medley. Now, see, Dee Dee Sound, I wrote for Italian disco. I wrote 1, 2, 3, 4, Give Me Some More, but that's not what you're talking about, is it?
I honestly, it came in today, and I didn't have a chance to listen to this one, so I don't know what to expect.
Yeah.
We can find out together, though.
We should find out.
We should find out.
Help me. No, Dee Dee found, I wrote a disco for Italians, and they said to me, and this, but this didn't have to do with Harry Tumon. This is for just for Dee Dee Sound. And for Dee Dee Sound, I wrote, they said, write a lyric for us that the Italians can sing along with while they're on the dance floor, even if they don't speak English.
Priceless.
So I wrote, 1, 2, 3, 4, give me some more. I know I need your loving, baby, not for more. Yeah. Oh, okay. See, Glenn just came in and he said it is two separate albums. I thought you were talking about one and the same. But
Maybe, anyway,
I was writing for Italian Disco, and they were recording in Harry's studio. And so Harry did all the engineering on that. And then the American Express and Harry Tumon, that was his own project at that same studio, but which he released at Baby Records, which was the Italian record company. So
I see. Let's have a sample of this, and we'll all understand it better in just a few minutes. Bob, the track is Dee Dee Sound, and I believe you have it loaded. Roll it. Well, then, Lucy, it in fact was 1, 2, 3, 4. Give you some more.
Yes, I understand now. You threw me for a loop. What happened was Glenn put together a medley of two songs, and the only relationship between those two songs is the fact that I wrote lyrics for both of them, and Harry Tuman was the engineer on both of those. But in fact, the first one was sung by the Italian brothers, La Bionda, and it was made for Italian disco. And the second part was Harry Tuman's own production, where he's singing, but mainly he's a sound engineer. That's his forte. But I did write lyrics for both of those, and they were recorded in the same studio. But Glenn had linked them together to make it easy, and I just didn't get it.
It stumped me too for a while. I'm glad we figured that out. I have to say the first track, the combination, was that a harmonica and violin together? That's a totally new sound. Was that something that was just, recall having heard.
It was just what I would call goofy. And if you are familiar with the record cover, which you're probably not, but it was a pretty goofy cover too. Yeah, they were just, and when La Bionda, when the brothers performed on television, they were wearing bowler hats and crazy. They were just kind of wild and crazy guys. That was their image.
I see. And they were French, were they?
No, they're from Rome. They're Italian.
They're from Rome. They're Italian.
And to this day, I will walk into an Italian restaurant and some waitress will say she's from Italy, and I'll say, oh, I wrote a song for Italian disco way back when, and I'll say it was called 1, 2, 3, 4, Give Me Some More, and she'll start singing it. And so it had that effect on people, because even if they didn't speak English, they could sing that 1, 2, 3, 4 while they were dancing.
Yeah, that's when it becomes part of the public consciousness that, you know, you succeeded when something becomes that ingrained. I think it's wonderful. Tell us about working with Donna Summer on Once Upon a Time. Now, that was part of the Fairy Tale High. There was a, if I'm not mistaken, that Once Upon a Time by Donna Summer. You worked with her on that.
It was the second LP, and it was a double LP. And it was, I'm thinking Fairy Tale High. It had one of my favorite tunes off of this double LP is Rumor Has It.
Ah, yes.
Rumor Has It. And Once Upon a Time. And then she did another one with the Four Seasons. But Fairy Tale High, that's not ringing a bell.
It was probably part of a medley I heard somewhere. It may be from an entirely different.
Yeah. Anyway, it's just the same gals. Gita and myself and Betsy and Roberta just singing back up. But at this point, Donna had already had a hit with Love to Love Your Baby. And then right after this LP, she actually moved to L.A. for good with Casablanca and started producing over there.
Well, moving on to a slightly different subject, Lucy, I want to ask you about Best Friends Sanctuary and your work there, and it looks like a wonderful place that in the San Diego Humane Society, is that?
Yes, actually, Best Friends is in Utah, and it's a fabulous, fabulous animal sanctuary, and they're very well funded. They have 33,000 acres right next to Zion. And so that the terrain is just gorgeous, all of this beautiful red rock and just like the park there. And they do amazing work. If you go onto their website, bestfriends.org, they have a fantastic website with a lot of interesting stories. And they take animals from all over, and they also rescue people who can't manage their own shelters or little, you know, small town humane societies, and they adopt those animals. They take in, they will bust people who are hoarders, you know, keeping 800 cats on a property, and they will take all the animals and rehabilitate them. Absolutely no kill. Their goal is to get things adopted, but if they can't, they live out their days at Best Friends, and they go to at great lengths to rehabilitate them. They have swimming pools, hydrotherapy. They will make carts for animal dogs who can't use their back legs, for instance, or they made prosthesis for a horse recently, had an artificial leg on a horse. And
wow.
I met several horses there that were older than 35 years old, 35, 41 years old, living in these gorgeous canyon lands. They have pot-bellied pigs. They have elderly donkeys and lots of young animals, too. And then in their cat facilities, they have the area for feline leukemia cats, and they have another area with cats with diabetes, and they have an area with lots of cats who have some sort of either injuries or they were born not able to use the hindquarters. They call that the incontinental suite, and that's where all those cats are.
Bless their hearts.
And they also went over to, they rescued at Hurricane Katrina, of course. I've walked dogs that were rescued from Hurricane Katrina. And they also went over to Lebanon when Beirut was bombed. And they brought 300 dogs and cats back from Lebanon who were trying to be cared for by two young gals who have the only humane society in all of Lebanon and greatly underfunded and all that. So best friends just flew over there and brought back 300 animals and helped them out. It's just an awesome place. And so I've been there twice. Each time I've gone for a week at a time with my oldest sister, who's also an animal nut like I am. And we volunteer. We walk dogs. We groom cats, clean cages, go out on a pickup truck and feed various horses and donkeys in a series of canyon pastures. It's an awesome place.
It really sounds like such a wonderful refuge. It's so no animal is put down there, whether they're adopted or not. They live there, live out their days there.
Right, and they get any medical treatment that they need.
Wow.
They require. It's outstanding. It's just so awesome. Bestfriends.org. And then here, I'm not, before I was working with the Humane Society and their event planning, but recently, in the last 2 months, I've been working for Project Wildlife here in San Diego, and that I volunteer on Fridays for 5 hours, and they take in wildlife, mostly birds and small animals like raccoons and bats and squirrels and possums, and they rehabilitate and release back in the wild. Now, they do have to put some animals down because they can't release any animal back into the wild who isn't 100% fit. Otherwise, he will be instant bait. So, but they have a very, very humane way of euthanizing. But my job there primarily is feeding baby birds, and we're just winding down the baby season, but I go in there and I feed all these little gaping mouths and have to learn about the different birds and how their digestive systems vary from a finch to a mockingbird to a jay, and they have a medical team who will examine injured animals that come in, and birds, they bring in a lot of hawks and seagulls with broken wings, and SeaWorld is always dropping off things that people have found and left there. It's lots of fun also.
Wonderful story. Wonderful story. I noticed also that they encourage the volunteers over at bestfriends.org. They encourage the volunteers to take dogs for outings and overnight trips. I think that's fabulous. It's like
wonderful. Doggies
night out.
It is, and I did that. I had a motel room in the town just 5 miles away, Kanab, Utah, on the southern border. And we would take dogs, and they'd get to sleep over in our motel room, and you take them for walks or long walks in the canyons, and that is part of their trying to rehabilitate them for and socialize them for so that they will be more adoptable. And when we bring them back from an overnight or a day's outing, we fill out an evaluation sheet and how did they do and did they run into any other animals and how did they react and how were they around people? You know, did they dislike men with hats or whatever their particular phobia happens to be, and we fill out an evaluation to make them more adoptable and for best friends to be able to get them to the right to the right people. It's fabulous. Well, you must
Lucy,
look at their website. It's just out, over the top, isn't it?
I did. I looked at it, and it is absolutely beautiful. If you folks would like to have a look at it, it's bestfriends.org, and it I can't imagine a better place for animals. And we've said on this show and other shows in this network, Lucy, that you can judge a person's character by the way they treat animals, and I wanted to bring that out about you.
Thank you.
We have a question from the chat room. We want you to tell us about Lady Bump.
Oh, well, this Lady Bump is Penny McLean, and it was during the same production, actually, that we were doing Silver Convention, and the same studio group and musicians also did this single for Penny McLean. And while she was singing, they also needed a little speaking part, which they asked me to do because I was the English-speaking person of the background group. And so in the beginning, I say something like, I think I say, "Hi, I was just itching to dance. I'm so glad you came in here tonight. Counting on dancing with you," something like that. I say on there.
Oh my stars! You're the one that does that.
Yes, and then we sang all the background vocals. And Geeta Walter, is the one who does the famous scream on Lady Bump. And I'm not going to try to imitate it. Those who know the song know what I mean.
Now, does Geeta, I think I'm pronouncing it correctly, does she have another name, a stage name? I was confused by what I read.
She did a single and an LP under the name of Jackie Robinson, not to be confused with the baseball player.
I see. So we might do some searches on Jackie Robinson then to find some of the old music that she did. Interesting.
Yeah,
what country was she from? That's an unusual name.
Glad you asked. She grew up in East Germany, and when she was 14 years old, she was singing. She got a fantastic voice, and she was singing with big bands in halls and then also in some clubs, but she was too young to be in those clubs, and so they dragged her out of there. And so she decided to go visit the West, and when she was 16, she came over to West Germany, and at the time, because East Germany was communist, they had to have a sponsor in the West, and they didn't let you take money with you, and you had to know who you were going to see. They wanted to make sure you had family left behind so that you wouldn't defect. Well, Geeta did, in fact, defect. She just chose not to come back. She was having a great time. She was singing in Stuttgart, and she was working in a butcher shop, which didn't last but a heartbeat because she was terrible at that. But she got started in her singing career in West Germany. Then, of course, she couldn't go back because she was a defector, and her mother was still in East Germany. And finally, when her mother turned 60 years old, she was permitted to leave the country, and again, without any money, just to visit Geeta. And her mother was because at that point they think, well, if they defect, they're no longer useful for the workforce, so they don't mind losing them. So her mom came to visit her in Munich and watched a show or two of ours, but was a little overwhelmed at that time, at age 60, having never seen an escalator before in her life and lots of traffic and everything. So she did go back home. And Geeta used to tell me that they never had any trash in the East, because anything that they were done with was either pig fodder, compost, fuel for the wood fire, the wood-burning stove, or if it was plastic, which was rare, like a plastic bag was rare at the time, was of course saved to be reused. They had no waste and no garbage pickup. Didn't need it.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
It's humbling to hear the background and how what people went through who sang this music. It really is an amazing story, very humbling. I didn't get a chance to hear all of the music that was sent today, but I did get a chance to hear some of it. One of the songs that I was bowled over by and had not heard before was one of your tracks when you were with the Hornets called You've Got a Right. And would you introduce that for us?
Oh, yes. We were singing with the Hornets, and the Hornets had become quite successful, too. We did a lot of television. In fact, we represented Germany in the Grand Prix Eurovision. So our producer, Ralph Siegel, at the time, we wanted to do something a little more contemporary, and because on stage we were doing all these oldies, and then we were also doing sort of German pop music. Well, we wanted to do something a little hipper. And so our producers contacted Bruce Chanel. And if you remember Bruce, he's the guy who wrote, "Hey, hey, baby, I want to know, will you tell you?" Remember?
Wonderful.
And I think he was living in Nashville at the time. And so they sent him some recordings of our voices, some of the cuts of our music. And he wrote this song for us, You've Got a Right to Love Somebody. And in this song, I'm singing in the beginning. I have the low voice, and then Geeta kicks in with her fabulous high voice on the second half.
Well, we have an email that arrived from our friend Larry Sanders, who's a first-generation DJ from, he played at Fire Island and a number of other places. He would like me to ask you about a track by Jackie Robinson called Moving Like a Superstar. And he points out that the 7-inch 45 RPM got disco play at some of the New York clubs.
It did?
Yes. Yes, Larry knows his stuff, so I'm sure it did.
Oh, well, I can't tell you much about it except that that was a single of hers, and she sings it very well. She's just got a kick-butt voice, and that one, too. She just sang the heck out of that. And on that same LP was another song called Get Up Jones, and she did a version of Sympathy for the Devil also on that LP. And this was a little more rockier music than she was singing with us and other groups. But yeah, Moving Like a Superstar. I didn't realize that it got play in the States at all.
Well, apparently it did, and you
I'll
have to be pretty devoted to run it as a 45, that was back in the day.
Yeah, I will let her know because she'll be happy to hear that. She's inherited her mother's house in this small town in where she grew up, and she now lives in the former East Germany.
Interesting. Well, we should run the track. We went off in a different direction for a moment, but I wanted to run the track You've Got a Right because it is an absolutely wonderful track. I really enjoyed it today, and Glenn has done an edit for us. And if you'd run that, Bob, it's called You've Got a Right when she was with the Hornets.
You got a right to love somebody. It's all up to you. You got a right to love somebody. It's all up to you.
Lucy, I have to say to you that that is very likely my new favorite song.
Oh.
Wow. It's just
fun.
Wonderful.
And you didn't
I don't
wrote
know.
This for us. It was fun.
It was, it's fabulous. I don't know where I was when that song came out. It's new to me. And I just think it's absolutely fabulous. And it ranks right up there with some of my all-time favorites. And what,
I don't even
what
know if
driving...
it got any airplay in the States. It's quite possible that they were just playing it in Germany. It was a single release, and we did television shows with it in Cologne and Dusseldorf and places like that. But I don't even... I was so oblivious to what was being played in the States of all the music that I was involved in at the time. It just never occurred to me that any of it was being played in the States, and maybe this wasn't, for all I know.
The energy of that particular song reminds me very much of the energy from of some of the songs from Flashdance, actually. It's,
yes.
It's got a wonderful, wonderful song.
You're welcome, and thank you for playing it. And when you mentioned Flashdance, that reminds me that Flashdance was written by Keith Forsey, who was the drummer on many of these productions that we've been talking about, and he was also the drummer on a thing that I think Glenn sent you that I wrote on my own that has nothing to do with any of these groups called Pool Hall Blues. But Keith Forsey went over to, he was English, but he was working in the Munich scene, and he went to L.A. about the same time Donna did, and he wrote Flashdance.
Wow. Well, you certainly put a new song in my heart. You, what a wonderful song. But, you know, I'll go on all night saying that unless I move along. Let's talk about a 33-second track that Glenn sent along. You did a commercial, and we have the audio from that commercial. Tell us about that, please.
Well, that's another thing that we were doing in the studio scene in Munich. The American companies were coming over to make their commercials in Munich because they didn't have to pay residuals like they did here. So they would come over and they would give us our $45 a track, and we would play them and walk away happy, and they would get away cheap. And so we did Wrigley's commercials and different things. And this particular one is just me singing, and it was for Nivea. And it was a television commercial, and you just see a lady and her leg. You don't see all of her, but you see her leg up on the edge of a bathtub, and she's putting cream on her legs. And then in the little break, the instrumental break you hear, of course, some guy's voice is coming over and talking about soft skin or whatever he does. But it's a Nivea commercial.
Amazing. And this was done in a studio in Germany, is that right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Bob, roll that. It's a 33-second commercial. We're going to run this one for free. Roll it, Bob.
From your fingers to your toes, you've got one set of feminine clothes, and with a little daily care,
I'd rush out and buy some. Buy it by the case. You know, our producer in production chat pointed out, by the way, that the song that we ran, You've Got a Right, would be a wonderful anthem song for the nationwide group Marriage Equality. I think he's got a great idea. I think we ought to send that along
to
them.
You've got a right to love somebody. Oh, you're so right.
Yes, Bob put things together really better than it. Okay, I'll have to contact them tomorrow and drop them a note. I think it would be wonderful. We have that's a 3:31 clip, or rather 3:24 clip. There's a longer version. I'm sure Glenn will send it right along. Tell us about Pool Hall Blues, please.
Well, and I just sent this to Glenn. I dropped it off today because he hadn't heard some of the Hornet stuff, and so I just threw on a little song that I had written on my own, and it was never recorded as a single or on an LP, but this is a demo of it. I wrote it in my living room, and even though I used to play guitar a lot. As soon as I got into the music business, I would write songs on guitar, and then I would invite my ever-so-talented musician friends over to my living room for as much beer as they wanted to drink, and they would put these amazing tracks down on my little Revox reel-to-reel two-track tape where you bounce one track off the other until at the end you've got...
This was a great recording.
And a horrible sound because everything is doubled. But anyway, so that's how I initially recorded it. But then I went into the studio and recorded it with Mike Thatcher on piano and Keith Forsey on drums, Nick Woodland on guitar, a lot of these same, Giuseppe Solera, saxophone solo, a lot of the same people that you recognize on all the LPs that we've been talking about. And I sang, I wrote the lyrics and the music, and I sang all the vocals on this particular demo. And I'm happy to say that we are now doing this song with my new group, Moxie, and my good buddy Nancy plays a killer guitar solo for us with Moxie. So it's really fun to relive this song. And I wrote it about pool hall blues because I really do like to play pool. And the song is about how, even though my parents paid for good education, here I am in the pool hall shooting.
Amazing. So you're a pool-playing, disco-singing, Broadway show-acting, commercial-singing disco diva. what a character you are. Bob, we have time. We're in the closing minutes of the show, but we do have time to run Pool Hall Blues. Let's roll this track, Bob. Thank you. was What Came Over You. What an interesting, interesting track. Do you regularly play pool still?
I played last weekend for the first time in years. I had a ball. I didn't play very good, but I looked good doing it.
That's so important.
I'm like I play golf, to hear that. I look like I play much better than I do. I have a good-looking swing, but I score miserably.
When I ran the list of pool playing, disco singing, stage acting, someone added in chat Olive Curran.
Yeah, you betcha. Olive I've got Curran. A house this year on my tree. Well, I'm really excited.
Well, I'm interested to hear about that. We have just a couple of minutes. Tell us about what curing olives is about. I just assumed you picked the olives and dropped them in a jar with a pimento. What's the deal?
No, they are so bitter when they come off the tree. It's amazing that anyone ever thought they were edible because they're incredibly bitter. So I don't like to use lye, which they use to cure green olives, which are unripe olives. So I like to just use natural curing with water. So I wait till they're ripe, wait till they're black. You take them out, you put a little slit in each one, and you immerse them in 5-gallon buckets of water. Change the water every day. It comes out very dark purple. You do that for about 3 weeks. And then you, or is it 5 days? I have to look at my recipe now. I can't even remember. But that's leaching the bitterness out. And then they kind of taste like nothing. And then you put them into jars and with brine and vinegar and salt and spices like garlic and hot peppers and lemon and thyme and things and seal them up and vacuum seal them so they won't spoil. And they are just killer. They're really, really good.
Well, it sounds absolutely wonderful. Do you sell these things or do you use them in your own cooking? Does Glenn have any?
No, because I haven't had a crop in years, and I haven't made them for about 4 years. He'll get some when I make them, but I'm excited because this is about the first crop I'm going to have in a long time, and I'm all out of the ones that I had put up, you know, in the cupboard. They've run out, and I just give them away to friends, and I use them myself. I don't sell them.
Wonderful. Well, you're quite an interesting person, Lucy. I knew when I read the materials about you that you're a most unusual person, and indeed you are. And again, the Lucy, I'm home. Who thought of that, by the way? We have just a second. Who thought of that? You did.
Well, I thought of it, and it was right in the beginning when very few people had domain names, and I just snatched that up. I thought that.
Well done. Well done. Well, we're going to have to. Wonderful. I've mentioned it. I hope you get some hits. We've mentioned it a lot tonight. You've been a wonderful guest. I am going to have to wrap because we have additional live programming coming up after Strictly Confidential.
Okay.
Lucy, thank you so much for being with us, and we'd love to have you back again, okay?
Thank you, Peter. It was delightful. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. Good evening to you, Lucy. And thank you, Glenn, for a remarkable guest indeed. You just never cease to amaze us. Glenn Rivera is a veritable disco magnet. And we appreciate him very much and the work he does keeping us with some of those interesting music guests on the planet. And I want to tell you that there is additional live programming coming up. John Fox and myself and Bob Kincaid will be doing a horn section in just a few minutes, starting at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. And there will be an All Foxed Up featuring John Fox from Australia at midnight Eastern Time. And thank you for joining us this evening. You've been great fun, and so has the guest. And in closing, here's Cynthia Manley reminding you to...